No matter how long it takes, he had said, I'll help you to remember. And if we can't find all of your past again, then I'll help you make new memories to fill those spaces. He brushed her hand, and she nodded. Cry reviewed the tapes of her speech before the New Republic Council, where she had insisted that they dispose of the Sun Crusher and stop trying to analyze it. The council members had grudgingly agreed to mothball the project by plunging it into the core of a gas giant planet. But now it appeared that this had not been sufficient to keep the super weapon away from an anger and determination as powerful as Kip Duran's. As she reviewed the holotape speech she had given, she heard the words in her own voice, but did not remember speaking them. She placed the memories in her mind, but they were external views of herself as seen and recorded by others. She heaved a deep breath and scrolled to the next data file. A cumbersome method, but it would have to do. Much of her basic scientific knowledge remained intact, but certain things were completely gone. Insights she had gained, new weapons designs, and new ideas she had developed. It seemed that when Kip had rummaged around in her brain, yanking out anything that had to do with the Sun Crusher, he had erased whatever he found questionable. Now Kwai had to rebuild what she could. It didn't bother her that knowledge of the Sun Crusher had been obliterated. She had previously vowed to tell no one how the weapon worked, and now telling would be impossible, even if she wanted to. Some inventions were better erased. The Maw assault fleet had been underway for almost a full day, heading toward the Kessel system. Kwai had been studying much of the time, sparing only a moment to talk to Wedge when he came to visit after completing his duties on the command bridge. When he brought her food, they ate together, making small talk, spending their time looking into each other's eyes. As she sat at the data terminal, Wedge would come and stroke her narrow shoulders, massaging until her tense muscles turned buttery and warm. You're working too hard, Kwai, he had said more than once.
I have to, she answered him.
She recalled her youth, when she had studied desperately, cramming knowledge of physics and engineering and weaponry into her pliable young brain for Moss Tarkin. She alone had survived the rigorous training. Kip's heavy-handed scouring of her mind had left her with those painful childhood memories, memories she would just as soon forget. There were some things she could not recapture from data tapes or tutorial programs. She had to go back inside Maw installation, into the laboratories where she had spent so many years. Only then could she determine which memories would come back and how much of her past she would have to sacrifice forever. The intercom rang out, and Wedge's voice flooded into their quarters. Kwai, would you come up to the bridge, please? There's something I'd like you to see. She acknowledged, smiling at the sound of his voice. She took a turbo lift up to the frigate's command towers and stepped out onto the bustling bridge. Wedge turned to greet her, but her indigo eyes were drawn to the broad viewport at the front of the Yavaris. She had seen the Maw cluster before, but her mouth still dropped open in awe. The incredible maelstrom of ionized gases and superheated debris screamed past the edges of the bottomless black holes in a great whirlpool of color. We came out of hyperspace near the Kessel system, Wedge said, and we're lining up our vector to go in. I thought you might want to watch. She swallowed a lump in her throat and stepped forward to take his hand. The black holes formed a maze of gravity wells and dead-end hyperspace paths. Only a few dangerously safe courses made passage possible through the tangled labyrinth. We downloaded the course from the Sun Crusher, Wedge said. I hope nothing's changed, or we'll all have a big surprise when we try to make it through. Kwai nodded.
It should be safe, she said. I double-checked the route.
Wedge looked at her warmly, as if her verification gave him more confidence than all the computer simulations. The black hole cluster was an impossible astronomical oddity. For thousands of years, astrophysicists had attempted to determine its origin, whether some freak galactic combination had led to the birth of the black holes, or whether some impossibly ancient and powerful alien race had assembled the cluster for its own purposes. The Maw sent out deadly radiation and was even now drawing the Kessel system to its eventual doom. For the present, though, the Empire had found a stable island within the cluster and had built its secret laboratory there.
Let's go then, Kwai said, looking out at the brilliant gases flaring in incredible slow motion. She had much to learn, and a score to settle. I'm ready, The ships of the Maw assault fleet spread apart, arrowing one by one into the heart of the black hole cluster. 5. One wing of the rebuilt Imperial Palace had been converted into a creche for the water-loving Calamarian people, humid quarters for those brought by Admiral Akbar, and trained as his specialized starship mechanics. The creche had been built of smooth plasteel and hard metal, fashioned to look like a reef within the towering palace. Some of the round portholes looked out upon the glittering skyline of Imperial City, while others gazed in on an enclosed water tank that circulated around the rooms like a trapped river. A loud venting of mist from the humidity generators startled Terpson out of nervous contemplation. He looked around his quarters wildly, swiveling his circular eyes, but he saw nothing in the shadows, only a jewel blue light shining through the water windows. He watched as a gray-green glurpfish oozed its way along the channel, filtering microorganisms from the brine. No sound intruded other than the steam generators and bubbling aerators in the wall tanks. Terpfen had heard nothing in his mind, felt no compulsion from his Imperial masters on Tirida for more than a day, and he didn't know whether to be frightened or hopeful. Fergin usually taunted and jabbed him regularly, just to remind him of his constant presence. Now, Terpfen felt alone. Rumors flew around the Imperial Palace. Distress signals had been detected from Tirida, and then all contact had broken off. New Republic scouts had been dispatched to inspect the area. If Tirida had somehow been destroyed, then perhaps the Imperial hold on his brain had been severed. Terpfen could finally be free. He had been taken prisoner during the vicious Imperial occupation of the water world Calamari. Like many of his people, Terpfen had been dragged to a labor camp and forced to work at the starship construction facilities. But Terpfen had been damned to undergo a special kind of training. Taken off to the Imperial military planet of Tirida, he had suffered weeks of torture and conditioning as xenosurgeons removed portions of his brain and replaced them with vat-grown organic circuits that allowed Fergin to use Terpfen as a perfectly disguised puppet. The poorly stitched scars on his swollen head had served as badges of his ordeal once he was released. Many Calamarians had also been severely tortured during the occupation, and no one suspected Terpfen of treachery. For years he had tried to resist his Imperial masters, but half of his brain was not his own, and the Imperial controllers could manipulate him at will. He had sabotaged Admiral Akbar's expanded B-wing fighter so that it crashed on Vortex, destroying the precious Cathedral of Winds and disgracing Akbar. Terpfen had planted a tracer on another B-wing, which had allowed him to obtain the location of the secret planet Anna, where baby Anakin Solo lived in isolation, protected from prying eyes and minds. Terpfen had passed that crucial information to a greedy Ambassador Fergin. Even now, the Tiridans must be mounting an attack to kidnap the third Jedi child. Terpfen stood before the aquarium window in his dim quarters, watching the glorp fish sluggishly go about its business. An aquatic predator swooped toward it, flailing spear-tipped fins and jagged jaws. The predator would fall upon the glurpfish, just as the Imperial forces would fall upon the helpless child and his lone protector, Witter, who had once been Leia's close companion and confidant. No! Terpfen smashed his flipper hands against the thick glass. The vibration startled the fanged predator, and it shot away in search of other prey. The protoplasmic glurpfish, unaware of what had just happened, continued on its way, sifting the water for microscopic food. Perhaps his Tiridan masters had only been distracted temporarily by other things, but if Terpfen hoped to accomplish anything, he had to make his move now. He swore that it didn't matter what damage it did to his own brain. Akbar himself remained in self-imposed exile on Calamari, working with his people to repair the floating cities that had been devastated in Admiral Dalla's recent attack. Akbar claimed to have no further interest in New Republic politics. Since an assault was to be launched against young Anakin, Terpfen would go directly to Leia Organa Solo. She could mobilize New Republic forces and thwart the Imperials. But she and Han Solo had just departed for the jungle moon of Yavin. Terpfen would have to go there, commandeer a ship, and meet her face to face. He would confess everything and put himself at her mercy. She might execute him on the spot, as would be her right. But even that would be a just punishment for the damage he had already done. His mind made up, at least for as long as it remained his mind, Terpfen took a last look around his quarters. Turning from the aquarium windows that reminded him of the home world he had left behind, he took a last glance at the faceted skyline with its kilometer-high skyscrapers, winking landing lights, gleaming shuttles rising toward the aurora that blanketed the night. Turpin doubted he would ever see Turruscant again. He didn't have time for a ruse. Using his own security access code, Turpin entered the starfighter servicing bay and walked briskly, confidently. His body odor was laced with tension, but if he moved fast enough, no one would notice until it was too late. The large launch doors had been sealed for the night. Two Calamarian starship mechanics stood around one of the B-wing fighters. A group of chattering Ugnaughts worked under the hyperdrive motors of a pair of X-wing fighters that had been jacked together to exchange navicomputer information. Turpin walked toward the B-wing. One of the Calamarians saluted him as he approached. The other lowered herself out of the pilot compartment, slinging down a webbed sack of tools. From his own terminal, Turpin had already checked the status of this fighter, knew it was ready to launch. He didn't have to ask the question, but it distracted them. Repairs completed as planned?
Yes, sir, the male Calamarian said. What are you doing up so late?
Just attending to some personal business, he said, and reached into the pocket of his flight suit. He whipped out a blaster pistol set to stun. He fired in a sweeping arc, catching both Calamarians with blue ripples. The male slumped to the ground without a sound. The female dangled on the rung, unconscious, as she thumped against the side of the B-wing. Finally, her elbow went slack, and she dropped to the hard floor in a tumble. Over by the X-wings, the Ugnaughts stopped chattering and stood up in amazement. Then they began squealing. Three ran to the comm alarm next to the controls of the launch doors. Turpin took aim and squeezed the firing button again, cutting the Ugnaughts down. The others raised their stubby hands in surrender, but Turpin could not risk taking captives, so he stunned them as well. Moving purposefully, he hurried across the slick-plated floor to the controls of the launch door. From the enameled badge on his left breast, he withdrew a disguised slicer chip the Imperials had provided months ago in case he should need to make a quick escape. Now, though, Turpin used the Imperial technology for the benefit of the New Republic. Turpin jammed the small wafer into the input slot and punched three buttons in succession. The electronic hummed, scanning the information in the chip. The slicer chip convinced the controls that Turpin had the appropriate override codes, that he had authorization from both Admiral Akbar and Mon Mothma. With a groan and a thud, the heavy launch doors split apart. The night winds whistled outside the hangar bay, gusting into the chamber and bringing the chill air. Turpin strode to the repaired B-wing, slid his broad hands under the arms of the fallen male Calamarian, and dragged him across the slick floor. He dumped the mechanic beside the slumped bodies of the stunned Ugnaughts. When Turpin moved the female mechanic, she moaned softly. Her arm hung at an awkward angle, broken in the fall. Turpin hesitated a moment in guilty misery, but the accidental injury couldn't be helped. A few hours in a Bacta tank would patch her up just fine. By then, Turpin would be on his way to Yavin 4. He clambered into the pilot seat of the B-wing and powered up the controls. All the lights winked green. He sealed the hatch. With the speed of the B-wing's engines, he could make it to the Yavin system in record time. He had to. Turpin raised the awkward-looking craft on its repulsor lift and maneuvered toward the open launch doors. Screeching alarms penetrated the enclosed cockpit, vibrating from the servicing bay. Turpin twisted his head to see what had gone wrong and spotted another Ugnaught, one who had apparently been hiding inside the cockpit of an X-wing. The lone Ugnaught had squirmed out in a panic and scurried over to the alarm panel. Turpin cursed under his breath and knew that he had to hurry. He had hoped not to fight his way out. He punched the maneuvering jets and shot out of the wide mouth of the launching bay. His stolen B-wing streaked away from the immense towers of Turruscant and headed out on a high-energy straight-line path to orbit. End of side one. To continue, turn the cassette over.